Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. So I'm going to be dialing my guest, Ian Hemme, and hopefully it will dial, and we will get to talk to him shortly. A little technical difficulties here. Hello, Ian.
Yes.
This is Mac. How are you?
Hello, Mac.
Hi. We are on the air, just so you know, and having a little technical difficulty, so just bear with me.
That's fine.
It's kind of normal in Blog Talk Radio. So you're based in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, the Steel City.
Yeah. I used to live in Brentwood. You live in the area
there? Brentwood. Yeah, I know Brentwood. I frequently, like I said, I grew up actually in Greensburg, which is kind of on the outskirts. It's in Westmoreland County. You know where Greensburg is then.
I didn't know the area. Yeah, I didn't know the area that well because I wasn't born there. But I lived there for like 6 years, so I know a little bit.
I was born and raised in Greensburg. So. And, you know, Pittsburgh, I would just, well, we're simple because Pittsburgh was only 20 minutes away. You know, of course, that's, we musicians and that adapted Pittsburgh right away. So, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Hang on one second. I lost my notes. I'm trying to remember what I had put in there. I actually didn't lose them. I dropped them, and where I dropped them, I can't reach them. So,
if you want to reach them, go ahead. I'll wait.
No, it's okay. Sorry. Usually I'm a little more together than this, but the internet was giving me problems. Blog Talk Radio was giving me problems.
I got you.
So do you I know that you're a musician, well, a musical artist. Now, do you compose music?
Yes, I compose it, I write it, I record it. I'm a multi-instrumentalist. I can actually play 10 instruments.
Oh, wow, 10.
Yeah. Well, like I said, growing up, I just always was interested in music and, you know, wherever I can get my hands on, if I could figure out how to make it work or how to make it play something, I would. So that's basically what I did.
I have a really good friend, and I always specify this because with, you know, the internet and everything, sometimes you could say friend, but they are friends if they're online. Because I have really good friends online that have my phone number. They know where I live and everything. But this is a real life friend that I've known for 40 years.
But, wow.
He's kind of like you. He plays a lot of different instruments, and he basically, if you put something in front of him, he can play it.
Yeah, that's basically the same way I am. You know, I can't read a note of music, so I play everything by ear. I actually have what they call synesthesia. I actually see music in colors. I don't know if you ever heard of that condition, but some people see music over here. Yeah, I have that. So, and I always just wanted to, you know, as a kid, of course, I never knew what it was. I just knew that whenever I watched, like a good example, I used to watch Bugs Bunny. You remember Bugs Bunny? And whenever he used to remember when he used to do the symphonic stuff? You know, he would kind of make fun of the opera. Yeah, and I was like, whenever I was watching it, it'd be like seeing colors. So, you know, from that time on, I just kind of got interested in it and just followed it.
Well, you probably liked seeing all those colors.
It's a strange. I mean, a lot of musical artists have it, the same thing. So, you know, it's not that unique. It's cool, but not that unique. But yeah.
It is actually. I mean, I don't have that. My friend, he can read music, so that he's like that one up on me. But I do play stuff by ear, and but the thing is I don't keep at it somebody that loves that kind of thing. You know, like you, once you start it, you want to keep at it. Because I can play the piano. but I didn't really keep at it to learn how to play it really, really well. I can play guitar a little. I can play the flute a little. But as far as having a one-man band like my friend does, no, I'd never be able to do that.
I mean,
do you also – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, dear. Go ahead.
Well, all I was going to ask you was if you were also a songwriter.
Yes. Yes, I am.
And, you go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah.
This
yeah,
is
right.
Your show.
Yeah, all my songs. Yeah, all the stuff that, you know, if anyone they go to one of the, I'm all over the internet, you know, different various music pages if they go on there. Anything they pull up or they hear, yeah, I pretty much wrote and played everything.
Yeah, I've seen that you're all over. You're like post-production, SoundCloud, Reverb Nation, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
I try to be everywhere.
YouTube.
Well, the thing about it was, I'll tell you what, when the internet came, of course, I was one of those artists that was afraid that it was going to kill the music industry, you know, because, you know, if you can remember back to the Napster days with the problems they had with Metallica and all these other bands. And honestly thought at that time that music was done for, you know. But after a while, I realized that it could either be your friend or your foe. And I sat back and figured out how to use a computer. This is still fairly new. Not every, you know, desktops were just becoming popular. So I made sure that I used everything I possibly could and used it to the best of my use, you know. So it actually kind of helped. So.
Oh, well, good. Well, yeah, and the internet, because you're all over the place, so with that networking, now I don't know how much time you actually spend doing the networking, but I'm sure that that helps you with your, you know, getting gigs and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like I say, it's been more helpful than anything. I'll honestly say that. So, yeah.
That's good.
You know, because I remember back. Yeah. I mean, I'm still old enough to remember when I used to go around and put flyers up, you know, around town, around the city, and stuff like that. And that was pretty tough. And nowadays, all you have to do is go on the internet and post something. So it actually works out to our advantage.
I'm 62, so I remember quite a few things that a lot of people don't remember. I remember tracks.
I remember my dad had some 8-tracks, though. You know, and my uncle was he's about, I think my uncle's 65, and he had I remember going to his. We lived next door to them, and I used to go to his house, and I'd see Alice Cooper and Aerosmith and Judas Priest all on 8-track. You know, it was just kind of neat. So I do remember.
Well, what's funny about that? I was telling somebody because they were talking about, you know, old stuff and retro. And I said, well, you know, it's just like when I was young, we were into retro stuff because we were using stuff that we hadn't used, our grandparents used, like the old, you know, phone, I can't think of the name of it right now, the Victaphone things and
of
that stuff. Yeah, and we would use that, and we thought it was, like, really cool because we never had that, so we thought it was cool. So I did the same thing with one of my nieces. One time for Christmas, I got her. It was vintage, of course, because they haven't had them for years, 8-track players. But you can still get just about anything you want because of the retro ideas that everybody has. So I bought her an 8-track player with a few 8-track tapes.
Cool.
And she looked at that, and she was like, now mind you, she was only like 12, 13, and she goes, wow, what's this? And I said, it's an 8-track player. She goes, I never saw one of these. And then she thought it was the greatest thing since since toasted bread.
Wow.
And here it was something that was really, really old. But one of the reasons why I got it for her was because she had said that she didn't like old stuff. She only liked new stuff. And so, like, a few weeks after I had given that to her, I told her that it was from back when I was a kid. She had her mouth like, down to the floor. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I imagine.
Yeah, I like retro stuff. I really do.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm more of the CD generation. So I remember when the cassettes transformed into the CDs. So that was my generation.
Right.
I had a million CDs, and, you know, probably 50, 60 cassette tapes, you know. That's whenever you could still find something that actually played cassette players. You know, nowadays, good luck trying to find
that. Yeah. Well, it's like with a lot of things, because somebody was telling me, oh, these are extinct. I was like, no, nothing's really extinct. Like VHS, you can find those, but it's like with anything else, it's considered vintage, and once it's considered vintage, then it costs more.
Yes.
It's like back to the original prices, because the first VCR that I ever got, I didn't want to get the most expensive because that was really expensive. And I didn't want to get the cheapest one because I figure, well, if it's cheap, it probably is cheap, meaning cheaply made. So I got middle of the road, which was $400.
Wow.
And that was after they had come down in price. And then, of course, after a while, they came down less and less and less to where you could finally get one for like $39, $49.
Yeah. The DVDs took over.
Right. But what I was trying to get across to this person that I was talking to was that you can still get them, because there are companies that are exclusively dedicated to making and producing vintage items. If you want a VCR, you can get a VCR. It'll probably cost you $400, $500, $600, $700. But if you really want one, you can get one. And same thing with anything else. Because I've gotten a few of those vintage items I was really interested in. So, it's very interesting.
Yeah, like I said, anything with the invent of the internet, you can pretty much get anything you want, you know, so.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's lots of times I've gotten lots of stuff, like for shows that 15 years ago I wouldn't have been able to find at any local store, you know, but now it's like you can go on the internet and, you know, click on, you know, 5 or 10 different spots and you can order it and you have it in a week. So.
Oh, yeah, I know. And then sometimes they're really fast with the delivery. Sometimes they're a little slow.
Yeah.
What I find really amusing, and I'm talking about before the COVID making the lines of distribution messed up and all that, I'm talking about before that, where it would take so long to get stuff sometimes. Like, back in the old days, in the 1800s, when Sears first came along, you had to, like, call and put in an order from their book. They would send you the catalog, and then you'd find what you want, and you'd order it over the phone, and they would ship it to you by Pony Express. And sometimes you could get that faster than what we're getting stuff today.
Yeah, the COVID it hit everybody hard. Like, even like, especially those of us like musicians and stuff, it made everything just grind to a halt. I mean, it was terrible.
Well, one of the worst things that it's done, I mean, other than killing people, is making the baby food shortage.
Oh yeah,
that is
because I
couldn't imagine like going into a store and looking for baby food and not seeing any, and then saying, "Where's all the baby food? We don't have any." It's like that's one of those things that. Well, like with the toilet paper, whoever thought that you would walk into a store and not be able to get toilet paper?
Oh, yeah, no. Like I said, that was totally unbelievable. So, I remember the day they verified, you know, that it was the COVID was, you know, around everywhere and it was very bad. I remember we was at a local store here in Irwin, and within that day when they announced, because we went earlier in the morning and there's no one there. We went back. I had to stop and get something. My wife had to get something, and it was packed, and everything was just disappearing off the shelves, and people were shoving, and it was awful, you know. So, and I remember there was this one felt so bad. There was this one young guy. He's not. I think he may be 20-ish, 21-ish. Young father, and he, you know, he's looking for diapers, and they're running off with carts full of them. It was terrible. It was simply awful.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the problems is that people, and they blame everything on the media. And I kept telling people, you can't blame the media for how people react to things. People are just nuts. Okay, you get what you need, maybe a little bit more, like as far as toilet paper. If you normally buy 9 rolls, maybe buy 18 rolls, buy double what you usually get. You know, you don't need to get 150 rolls.
Oh, I agree.
That just takes away, yeah, it takes away from somebody else.
Yeah.
But one thing that I was able to do, because I always buy extra, because toilet paper is one of those things that you never want to want it and not have it.
Have it, yeah.
So I always make sure I have enough. And once I had heard that it was coming about, it hadn't even happened yet, the shortage, I heard that it was coming to that. And so I did buy a few extra. I didn't go crazy. I just bought a few extra.
Yeah, yeah.
And so by the time the shortage actually hit, I was able to tell the manager of this complex, because she was talking about how people were not being able to buy toilet paper and stuff. And I said, well, if it comes down to it and they really need toilet paper, I said, you can send them to me. And if they want to just go one roll, I said, I'll give them one roll, and I'm not going to charge them. Because
yeah,
the bad
yeah.
thing about that was is that's what people were doing. They were selling toilet paper. Yeah.
I seen it on
$5 a roll.
One of the online places. I'm not going to name any names. But, and there was somebody trying to sell, it was like 6 rolls for $80. They probably got it. You know, that's just crazy.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Well, I told her, she said, well, how much are you going to charge? Because they'll ask. And I said, well, if they want more than one, I might charge them a little bit because that'll take away from somebody else.
Uh-huh.
And I said, but right now, I've got enough. If you send 100 people over here, I've got enough to give at least 100 people one roll of toilet paper.
Yeah.
I'm not going to charge them because I'm not that way.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, if you remember, shortly after that, there was a mask shortage as well. I'm sure you remember that.
Right.
Thing about that, I remember whenever that came about, my wife actually would make them and give them to people. She would mail them all the way out to England. You know, people asking her for it. She would make them. She would spend days and days and days making these and sell. You know, we paid everything, postage, everything, we'd mail it to them. You know, that's. You know, that's, you know, so in a sense, I know what you mean. That's the type, we're the same type of people, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, you sound like really good people.
Well,
I want to get back to, I want to get back to you and your performing, although
okay.
I always try to, like, chat a little bit with my guests about whatever.
Yeah, that's fine.
So do you, good, I'm glad it's okay with you. Because I do what my guests want to do. Do you do live performances?
Yeah. Actually, I've been doing recently did a few live performances. I'm actually, I believe you've spoken to Panic Terror Films already. I'm sure, because I know you've spoken to them. I'm actually doing 2 movies with them. And one of the movies that I am doing is called The Steel City Architect. Drew Moreland, she's wonderful. She's great. What she's doing is like filming some of the shows for that, and we're going to turn it into like a modern day Spinal Tap movie. So, you know, so yeah, I've had quite a few performances, and releasing Hobo Saves the World here pretty soon. So I'll be making a couple cameos in that, and you know, so I mean, I'm in between the playing out, I'm doing that and doing some acting with Pantera Films and Drew Moreland and Jason Dalzell. So, yeah, I've been keeping pretty busy. So.
Oh well, that's good. That's actually good.
You
know, now.
Oh yeah, like I said, she's a very industrious young lady. I'll tell you, she's great.
She is. Did you see her new comic book?
Yes, that was just released on Cutthroat Comics. Yeah, tells. I already got. Yeah, I got mine already. So yeah. Whenever she was doing it. Mine's coming. I did order it, but there was a mix-up somewhere. I guess it was at the Cutthroat Comics or whatever the case. I can't remember. But and I reordered it again. But anyway, whenever she was doing it, she was posting it on her Facebook and that. And that's just unbelievable. Wow, 300 plus hours. Wow. That's all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It does take a lot of time to draw stuff and make it look right.
Yeah.
So,
like I said, she's a busy little girl. So,
yeah, and then she's got all that other stuff she's doing too.
Oh yeah, yeah, she just filmed Shingles, the movie, and she appeared in a movie Virus. She's like I said, she's extremely industrious.
Right. Oh, she is. So since you already started talking about it. Because I know I had that on my list. Though I had stuff written down, I don't actually need it because I've got like this eidetic memory usually. it is eidetic. Just sometimes because I'm old, it takes me a little longer to remember it. But I do remember that I had to ask you. But since you were already talking about it, I figure you can like expand on it. Your association with panic terror films, because didn't that come about because of Pseudoscape Inc. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, again, yeah, Pseudoscape Inc. is actually a company. I do all my audio recording and video recording, and that's actually something I started about 2008-ish, I believe. With a friend of mine, we was a musical duo at the time, and we started doing that. What happened there? How I came across Panic Terror Films is I was just trolling around on the internet, and I came across their trailer they had for it was the first trailer I believe for Hobo Saves the World, and I contacted Jason mm-hmm. Dalzell, and I was like, hey man, that's really cool, I just started talking to Jason, and one thing led to another, and after I started talking to Jason, then I got introduced to Drew. And we just, all three of us just hit it off great. You know, we all have the same demeanor, like the same things and stuff like that. And so what happened there is I was like, one of these days, since you're doing films and that and doing videos, if you want to do video or maybe even, ideas for a movie or something like that. And it snowballed, basically, is what happened. And I ended up, I'm going to do a couple cameos in Hobo Saves the World. As well, I do the theme song as well. And then we're also embarking on the Steel City Architect, which is, like I said, our Spinal Tap type spoof. So, yeah, it just kind of just took off. The ideas they had were just, I thought they were just great, here's two people out of Pittsburgh, and they're doing that simply because of the love of it. And that was... definitely something to appreciate. You have to respect that. So yeah, it's been great with them.
Oh yeah, he's another one he's always got something going on.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like I said, they're both really, really busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I said, that's what you got to be an artist. Like in the same sense, I'm an artist as well. Some of us just don't know when to quit. so we don't. And eventually it pays off in all the right ways. And so far it has been. And we're going to keep open for the best. Looking forward to a long, adventurous journey with Panic Terror Films. And, I'm sure they feel the same.
Oh, well, actually, I kind of know that they do because he was the one, he was the one in introduced me through Facebook, but still, like mm-hmm. I said before, it's still an introduction.
Yes.
Introduced me to you, and he was saying all kinds of good things about you. So
thank you.
He's like, oh, he's so great, and you need to have him on your show. And I'm willing to give anybody a shot on my show because it's like, I've told people, you don't have to be a celebrity. I mean, yeah, most of my guests are celebrities of some kind or another. Because you would be considered a celebrity.
Locally, I guess.
But there are some that they're just somebody who has something to talk about. And that's what I tell people. All you need to be on my show is something to talk about.
Yeah, something of interest that piques people's interest. I got you.
Yeah. And normally I don't do religion, but I did have a very good friend of mine on. He's a ordained minister, but I only did it because I knew that he wasn't going to be thumping people over the head with his religion.
Okay.
That's why I went ahead and had him on, because he has interesting stuff to talk about all the time. So, so I have all kinds of people. So I obviously don't mind having musicians, because my first boyfriend was a musician, and
what instrument do you play?
Oh, he was one of those that played a lot of different instruments.
Okay.
But he mostly played bass,
Okay.
But he did play drums and a bunch of different things that he would play. He was usually the lead singer. But his band that he was in, and I'm not allowed to say the name, but he used to open for a lot of big names, because you know how they usually get like locals, like say if some big name person was going to play in Pittsburgh, they get a local person.
Local band,
So you, because since you're a musician, you know what I'm talking about. So it's mainly for anybody listening that doesn't understand that. So he would open for a lot of different people, but he quite often opened for Tina Turner. So because of that, that was pretty cool. Because of that,
That's really cool.
Of course, I got to meet her. Her, and not only that, I got to sing with her too.
Wow.
And
Tina Turner.
She
phenomenal.
Told me. Yeah, she told me that I was a good singer. I mean, that would be like somebody that you really admire telling you, hey, you're a great whatever instrument. You're a great bass player. And you'd be like, whoa. one thing that I thought was really interesting, this is going away from music for a minute, if you don't mind. You remember some of the old-time dancers, like Mikhail Baryshnikov. That's funny that, he's now an old-time dancer.
I do remember my sister actually taught dance for years and years and years, and he was actually one of her favorite dancers. So, I know.
And then, of course, Fred Astaire. And the thing that I found really interesting, it's always interesting no matter what profession it is, but you have these dancers that are great, phenomenal dancers, and they all would say, oh, it was so great to see Fred Astaire. He is the greatest. And it's like, yeah, you're great too. But they all would show him the love. Like Fred Astaire was like the person to be like.
Oh, yeah.
Just like actors.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you get
royalty.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you get these really great actors, and they're great themselves, and then they start talking about, oh, yeah, so-and-so is really great. And I'm like, well, yeah, so are you. But the nice thing about that is that tells me that they're not so far into their own head that they think they're better than everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good thing. I mean, that's a good trait to have, That's a hard to find. That's a hard to find commodity, really, nowadays. You know, with the all these on-site things. You can just put your 1 minute of video up, and you know, it's so yeah. There's a lot of that.
Yeah, there is, and it's all over, not just in Hollywood.
So
one thing that I wanted to ask you is, mm-hmm. now I know you go by Silicon Kong. Where did you get that name from?
This is actually an interesting story how I got that. I've always, like I said, I like all styles of music, but definitely one of my go-tos would be the industrial metal. That'd be like Nine Inch Nails, Ministry, mm-hmm. Rammstein, you know, and it's just, I mean, that even spawns back, and now that I talk about that, I mean, it's not just the industrial metal. That actually derived from the 80s New Wave, you know, The Cure, Depeche Mode, you know, they all really started that whole movement. So it's kind of, it broadens the spectrum of, you know, I liked all that music, you know. And what how I came up with it was a lot of stuff I do, like say everything I do is I do by myself. And a lot of the stuff I have is machines. I use drum machines and stuff, electric drums, stuff like that. And I was just actually really funny. Do you remember the movie with Jack Black, the King Kong that Jack Black was in?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, at that time when that movie came out, I was still kind of just puttering around with, you know, my own stuff. And I was like, well, you know, and, you know, I love that movie. Jack Black, I love Jack Black. So, you know, of course, I watched it.
Me too.
Well, anyway, how that came out was, you know, I was, you know, it was kind of watching King Kong. And I got to thinking, and I was like, and there was the day before I seen something on the news, and he was talking about Silicon Valley in California, you know, all the electrical things that come out of Silicon Valley. So I sat back and I was like, just out of nowhere, I put the two together. And I was like, Silicon Kong, you know. And from that, actually, Silicon Kong actually started off, like I said, he's definitely a alter ego. Definitely an alter ego. I have like five of them. You know, that makes for good entertainment. So, and and I came from that. And he was actually supposed to be, he was a character that I formulated in my head. You know, because I like to, you know, write little stories and stuff like that. He was actually a character that was, you know, based out of Pittsburgh. I don't know if, well, you lived in Pittsburgh for a while. I'm sure you, I don't know if you ever heard the folklore, Joe Magarac. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah, he was a folklore in the steel mills. Back in the day, he was a big, kind of like a Paul Bunyan type thing. It was a Pittsburgh thing, mm-hmm. you know, definitely a Yinzer thing. So I actually thought about that, and at that time where I was doing that, coming up with different unique sounds and stuff, a neighbor down the street actually gave me an old coal miner's mask from the 40s. It was his grandfather's. I'm talking the real old school ones. And I just kind of envisioned that mask with lights on it, and kind of like a Joe Magarac character. That's where it all came from. And everything just kind of piled on and piled on and piled on. And, you know, of course, I did other things at the time. I was also in different bands at the time. I was in 3DS. I was in April's Fool, Pseudo Anno, a couple other things I was doing at the time, too. But Silicon Kong was always my own little palette, you know, where I just kind of did what I wanted. So, but that's where it came from.
Well, that is a very cool story. I like that.
Well,
I like that name too, Silicon Kong.
Like I said, it just kind of works that way, you know, because if you think about it, it's like, because I do everything, is definitely electronic, like everything I do is electronic and I do myself, and it kind of fits, you know. So I just always kept it.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that I know about you, it doesn't have to do with magic. I mean, magic. No, I don't know why I said that. I was thinking of somebody I know that does magic.
Okay,
it doesn't have anything to do with music.
Okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with music.
I got you.
So you consider yourself a cryptozoologist.
Yes. Yeah, I am actually.
So now, yeah. I say consider yourself because...
Yeah,
because
there's really no...
According to what it actually means, you're saying something exists, that you think something exists that doesn't exist. And I'm not saying either way. So I didn't mean it as a put down. I hope you know that.
No, that's fine. No, don't worry about it.
Okay. So I'll just change it and say, so you are a cryptozoologist.
Yeah.
Now,
it's fun.
I'm sorry. Did you want to say something?
No, I just say it's actually a fun little thing to dabble into. So.
Oh, well, actually, I wouldn't consider myself necessarily a cryptozoologist, but I do find it all very interesting, and I do check into it every so often because I look at the different things that people have found and some of the, you know, proof, so-called proof that they have. And some of it is, it does make you think, like, okay, you know, this looks more real than it looks fake.
Uh-huh.
And now this isn't about a creature, but it's like, it could be about a creature if you're thinking about the aliens inside the ship. But when you talk about Area 51 and all the stuff that supposedly happened, well, the thing that makes it look kind of funny is, okay, if there wasn't something to hide, why does the government redact everything?
Yeah, good question.
I mean, that's a good question.
That's a real good
question. Because if there
was
nothing to hide, yeah, why would you have to redact everything? But yet whenever you see anything, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, cause I just recently, I don't know, since within the past year or so, I've been reading a lot that, the government's actually coming out now and saying, hey, there is something there. We don't know what it is. Blah, blah, blah. We're looking into it, stuff like that. I mean, I've seen that a lot recently, you know, more than ever. So just kind of touching on the whole alien UFO thing. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, and one of the reasons why they're doing it is because of, you know, all the stuff that we got now, and it gets harder and harder and harder for them to hide stuff from
us.
Exactly.
Yes, I agree.
Because back then it was real easy to hide stuff. It was like, weather balloon. Yeah, right, weather balloon. Uh-huh. When they just had...
Oh, yeah.
Go
ahead. Balloons. Yeah, weather balloons. That's funny.
Yeah.
I just... But I got a cool little story for you, since you're interested in that. You're familiar with the Kecksburg incident, right?
Yes, I am.
'65? Okay, well, my uncle, I have an uncle. He's passed on, God rest his soul. But he was a fireman at the time, and he lived right in the town of Mutual when it came down. You know, and to the day, you know, I was talking to, you know, I was just a little kid, and I always used to joke around with him and stuff like that. And finally, whenever I got older, he actually told me one day, I was like, hey, you know, what was really up with that? And he's like, well, he said, it wasn't ours, I'll tell you that. So, I mean, that goes to tell you, that tells you something, you know.
Oh, yeah, it most definitely does. And
not only that, I mean,
oh,
go ahead, honey.
No, you go ahead, because this is your
show. I was just saying, my lineage, I'm Native American as well, half Native American. And we totally believe in star people. You know, that's part of who we are. I mean, there's no questioning it. That's what we're told, you know, as we are raised. That's what we're told in stories, and that's just established fact as far as, our beliefs, so.
Oh, yeah, I know, there's, because I'm not half, I'm only fourth, but I do have a lot of that instilled in me from my grandmother, that a lot of the beliefs, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, my grandma was a Sioux, and she was a Sioux. I come from the Sioux tribe.
I actually have on both sides of my family, so it's like, you know, I'm a little closer to being a half than really a fourth, but it's like kind of messed up because my grandmother on one side, she's Cherokee, and then I have a great-grandmother on the other side who's an Apache. So
okay, wow, Apache.
I got a little, yeah, I got a little bit more than a fourth, but it just was interesting all the stuff that I would learn from them, and you know, so it was very interesting spending time on the reservation with my family.
That's one of the things I'm most proud of. My heritage, so yep. You know, we just live differently, you know. We view things differently. You know, that's the way we're taught.
Yes. Yeah, and that's probably where I get I'm more open to things, and just because there's no quote-unquote proof doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. I mean, I would rather have the proof, but just because it's proven doesn't mean that it's not there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I actually seen this one movie. I forgot what movie it was. A cute movie, but the one kid made a quote. He's like, "Do you believe in $1 million?" And the one guy's like, "Yeah." I said, "Have you ever seen $1 million?" He's like, "No." I said, "Well, then, what makes you say it's not there?" So, I mean, kind of, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of the same thing, you know.
Right.
You know. Oh, yeah. You know it exists. You just never seen it, but it does exist. You know. But yeah, like I said, that's just the way. You know, we never questioned. You know, we never questioned our grandparents or whatnot. We just listened.
Because they're telling us what they know, and they're wise, and that's how they got as old as they did, by being wise. That's the way I always looked at it when I was a kid. And my great-grandmother, her tribe had a thing where everybody let their hair grow as long as they could. Which that's true of a lot of Native Americans.
But for
her particular ones though, they never cut their hair, and so it'd always be up on her head. And one day she took it out and let me comb it. And she had a big long sofa. I mean, it was a long sofa, big enough for like four people, and.
Uh-huh.
Her hair went all the way across the whole thing.
Wow.
And I was brushing her hair, and she was telling me how long it had taken her to grow it that long. She said that one time, although they're not supposed to cut it, she said one time her hair got cut because just like some of us would do, meaning, you know, me and my family, when we would get like gum in our hair, she got something in her hair and she had to cut her hair. But other than that, she had never cut it. So it was like 40, 50 years she had never cut her hair.
Yeah, my mother actually had her hair down to her waist all of her life, you know. She never cut it.
Aww. Yeah, me, I had hair. I mean, I finally did cut it, but I guess I got that from my my grandmother and great-grandmother, too, that I wanted to keep my hair really long. But it was down to my knees.
Wow.
And so being that long, I didn't want that much of a cut. So the first time I went to get it cut, I said, I only want it cut to the middle of my back. And that actually was a lot to cut off, considering it was to my knees.
Wow.
And what they did was they cut it like, you know, because I couldn't tell what they were doing, but they cut it like just under my shoulders. And then once they put the curl in, because I also wanted a perm, and once they put the curl in, the hair was up above my shoulders.
Ooh.
And I cried because it was so short, and I didn't want that.
My hair was down to my waist for years and years. I just recently cut it here about a year or so ago. But, anyone that knows me will tell you I've always had hair like down to my waist most of my life, you know, at least down there. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, getting back to cryptozoology,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which creature, or mythical, supposedly mythical, would you most like to find absolute concrete proof of their existence?
Wow. Thunderbird. It would be the Thunderbird. Because we told us, kids, you know, as kids about the Thunderbird, how if you were naughty and you were out in the woods at night, the Thunderbird would take you.
Right. I kind of expected you to say Sasquatch.
Thunderbird. Only because, like I said, I mean, that one was probably pretty predominant growing up. Like, it was my native heritage. I was pretty predominant. Well, that and Bigfoot.
Right.
You know, we used to call him. Yeah, they call him the trickster. You know, so he was actually very.
Yeah.
They actually coincided with us for years and years and years. So I mean, like I said, that's what I'm told growing up. You know, the stories I was told. So, you know, who am I? I'm not going to not believe it. You know.
Well, right. And now with Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, whatever, wherever people are at and whatever they call that particular creature, there are just too many instances where it just looks so real and that it's like, nah, I don't think it was faked. Not everything. I'm not saying there's not some fake stuff, but I don't think that it's all fake.
No. No, and the thing about that is I was actually discussing it with one of my coworkers. He's an avid hunter. And we was discussing the existence of Bigfoot. And, you know, me and him, I kind of got into like a, not just a small discussion about, you know, his opinion and my opinion why he remains hidden. He remains, just hides from people. You know, he's very elusive. And he actually had a really, really good point that I never really thought of. Okay, and this, he gave me this as an example, and he actually makes a lot of sense. I'm a hunter, and lots of times I'd go hunt a turkey. You know, I like turkey hunting. Okay, here's the thing. Here's a turkey with a very small brain, not a very smart bird. But the whole time I'm hunting, they're smart enough to stay away from me. So he was like, so what makes you think there isn't a 8-foot bipedal creature out there with a brain huger than that, that's smart enough to stay away.
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, I was like, I never thought of that, but you're absolutely right.
Well, yeah, and the funny thing is that I've always thought of that, because I've told people that even when I was a kid, when they'd say, oh, then why does he always hide? And I'm like, well, think about it. If you were some creature that was almost human, and you got humans walking around that are basically killers, wouldn't you want to stay away from them?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that goes back to our alien whole thing. And it's like, and the people are like, well, if aliens are real, then how come they haven't showed up? Well, it's because they're... we're primitive. I wouldn't want to visit humans either, you know? You know, our whole approach is shoot first, ask questions later, you know?
Yeah, well, the one that I like, a movie that I like to use for people that say that is Watch the Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, yes. Tom Cruise one or the original?
Yeah.
Or the Keanu Reeves.
The original.
Keanu Reeves actually did a really good one, a remake. So if you ever get a chance to check it out.
I've seen it. It is good, but the original is just for some reason. I think it's because it is more laid back.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually get a little bit more out of it, because the one with Keanu, even though I liked it, you know, and Gort was made more scary and everything. With all the extra special effects and everything, it kind of took a little bit away from the story, because the big thing in that movie was that they wanted to kill him even though he was just visiting.
Mm-hmm.
And he just was some guy that was from another planet. And
yep.
he was going to
yep.
give them a gift, and they shot him.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, that's pretty much, you know, it's sad, you know, but like I said, I mean, I've always been a firm believer that, you know, we're basically just an ant farm. You know, that we're just being watched and observed, you know.
Well, if I was an alien and I wanted to watch us, I would watch us from afar.
Oh, yes,
and,
definitely. If you pass Earth, you're putting up your windows and locking your doors.
Because
put the windows up, we're passing Earth.
I was like, oh, no. Oh, this planet. Let's go past this as fast as we can.
Yeah, don't even look at it. But I agree with you. I mean, I honestly believe there intelligent life out there wouldn't want anything to do with us. You know, like I said, we just have no. I mean, we can barely get along with each other. You know, mankind.
Exactly.
You know, and it's so. Why would they want to? Hey, how are you? You know, I wouldn't either.
Yeah, not on a major scale. I do believe that some of the stuff that is supposed to be happening happens, like people being abducted.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of believe that, because why not? Because they're taking people, at least that's what I'd be assuming, is that they're taking people that they've watched for a little while, and they can see that they're nice people and that they're not killers and stuff.
Yes.
And
oh,
so they abduct them. And yeah. And
oh, the whole abductee
thing,
I kind
of believe that.
Oh, yeah, totally. I totally 100% agree with it. So, yeah.
Yeah, because that's what you would want to do if you were, like, going to another planet that was primitive. You'd want to start picking out the people that were more advanced,
mm-hmm.
more evolved, or
yes.
whatever you want to call it.
And
yeah. some of us are more evolved than others.
Yeah. Wish we had, you know, yeah. Wish sort of, you know, it would just kind of spread to be more evolved and, you know, make the planet a better place, you know?
Yeah. Well, at least for the most part, and I was just talking about this, but we don't have a lot of time, so I'll try to make this short. Because
okay.
believe it or not, we're down to like 7 minutes.
But wow.
I was just, I was just talking with that friend of mine that's an ordained minister, but we weren't really talking about we're really talking religion, but but since we were talking about aliens and everything, I asked him if he had seen the movie Starman. So have you seen that?
Oh, yes. One of my favorite movies, Jeff Bridges. Love it.
Yeah.
Movie.
Yeah. One of mine too. And so I, reminded him of the part where the Starman is sitting with the government, one of the government men. He was the one that didn't want to, Charles Martin Smith.
He was in that. Yeah, go ahead. I was thinking, because I remember Toad from American Graffiti was in that movie, too. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So he was the one that didn't want to hurt the Starman. The other government people, they wanted to do an autopsy on him while he was still alive. And so he's sitting
there.
The
part where he walks in and
he
sees the table with the straps. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he starts asking the Starman questions, and they don't really have time because he needs to get away. And so the Starman says to him, "Do you want to know what I find most beautiful about you?" And the government man nods, and he says, "You are at your best when things are worst."
Worst. Mm-hmm.
And even though we do have a tendency to be savage, that actually is true.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
That there are bad people that take advantage of people when stuff happens, but for the most part, when some big thing happens, like an earthquake or whatever, you know, just name some catastrophe that happens, people come together and help other people.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, and the one thing that I had told him about, I said, I don't know if you've seen this, because I watch a lot of these things online, these little videos, but it was in New York, and they were fighting. There was these people in the subway, and they were fighting because I guess it was on the security camera, and they were fighting. And then all of a sudden, everybody stopped, and they just, like, ran over to one of the subway cars. And they all were pushing on it, and they pushed the car over, the subway car over, because a woman had got her leg caught in there. And all those people that were just fighting with each other, they stopped fighting and went and helped that woman.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying that there's I'm not saying that there's absolutely no hope. No, it's there. It's definitely there. People just need to recognize it. They just need to recognize it a little bit more, and utilize it a little bit more.
Oh, I agree. Well, I'm just saying that I believe, and there is evidence for me to believe, that most humans, not all of course, but most humans are inherently good people. Even though they may do some bad things once in a while, when it matters, they will do the right thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of humanity has just lost their way. And, you know, I've seen recently here, you know, since the pandemic, real quick, I've seen, because I'm actually a male nurse, that's my profession, I've actually seen it change a lot of people. And it's going, so far it's going in the right direction. And I just hope it keeps going that way, you know.
Yeah, I'm a non-practicing nurse. I am a nurse, and I do go out to help if they need volunteers, but I don't like work as a nurse because I can't because I'm disabled. So, but yeah. So in other words, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I mean, now that we're down to like, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, dear. Go ahead.
All I was going to say is now that we're down to 3 minutes, this is where I kind of want you to like if there's anything that you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to say, something that you want people to know, like where they can get a hold of you or whatever. Now's your chance. You've got a little under 3 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Anybody, Alexa, like you said, you can just type in my name and have me, and it'll pull up everything, all my sites, everywhere I'm at. Real easy to find. So, you know, if anybody's interested in finding any of my music or my videos or seeing how production is going with the Panic Terror Films. You can look them up too as well. Panic Terror Films, based out of Pittsburgh. And yeah, like I said, feel free to creep on us. We don't mind.
That's funny. That's all you have to say then?
Yeah. Feel free to creep on us and share. Share with other creepers. We don't mind.
Well, since we do actually have like 2 minutes left, so I just real quick, getting back to the hunters, you've seen Harry and the Hendersons, right?
Yes.
That's another good reason. Remember when Harry saw the deer on the wall, and he was looking that deer head, and he was looking for the body on the other side?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'd hide from somebody that was putting heads up on walls too.
Yeah. And remember, he tried to save the fish too, didn't he?
Yeah,
he was trying to save the fish and taking him out. I think it was the fish.
Yeah,
that's one of my wife's favorite movies. I mean, me and my wife watched that movie a million times. So,
me too. I love that movie. So there's like a little over 60 seconds. Anything you want to say in closing?
No, just thank you very much for giving me an hour just to ramble on. But yeah, like I said, if anyone within earshot wants to check us out, like I said, he and Hemi, look that up, or Panic Terror Films, and feel free to spread the word. Like I said, the two new movies coming out are Hobo Saves the World and Steel City Architect, Pittsburgh Rockumentary. And if you want to keep up on it, keep in tune with us and see what's up, feel free to. And say hi. Come and drop us a line, drop us a message, wave, whatever.
Okay. All right, well, thanks a lot. And my guest tonight has been Ian Hemming, also known as Silicon Kong. And thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Have a good night. Bye.
You too, dear. Right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.